Nigeria's currency went from like 400 or something to one to 1650 to one. That means if you're a startup and you grew 300%, you still shrank because you have to report in dollars.
Yeah.
Imagine how hard that is. And then you had the AI boom, which completely made a bipolar world. You have China and you have America, and majority of the capitals went to either one. You have a lot of startups that ended up dying on the vine. They didn't get to see their true potential.
But do you think there's other opportunities, especially with this huge youth population, that Africans should be tapping and building?
First and most importantly, you have to be...
Yakob Behane, born to Eritrean parents and raised between worlds. First with Parity and now with Quail Meetings, Yakob has become one of the quiet architects shaping how African founders connect to opportunities.
This is a real deep story for me. So I'm Eritrean. My parents had to leave during the Civil War. So my grandfather was one of the first Africans in the 60s to go to Harvard Law. And during the war, he was targeted and he was killed. He was assassinated. He was never found.
Never found.
Never found.
To this day. So how did you get to Africa? Like, how did you make the leap?
All this stuff is so deep and, like, emotional for me, but...
Oh, yeah, this is the part I definitely want to get your thoughts on, right? Which was, in the world where AI can almost do anything, I believe that the next level up, especially when you're thinking about hiring people, is discernment, judgment, and taste, right? What do you think about that?
This is the crazy thing.
We see the tweets... And every single day, what we see is we love Afropolitan. This podcast is underrated. This is the best podcast ever. But the problem is 82% of you are not subscribers, but I know you guys are watching. So I need you to click the subscribe button so you can join the Afropolitan family. Thank you. Jacob. So typically when someone clicks your specific video, and they may be winding down from a long day. They may be working out. Maybe they're at a cafe catching up on work. And the first thing I want you to tell the Afropolitan audience is, what does it actually take to be a builder in Africa? And I know you have extensive background on what it actually takes. Like, I want you to take us to the raw.
Okay. I would say, first and most importantly, you have to be an optimist. You have to be optimistic about building because it's going to motivate you through those moments where you're like, we've had so many discussions. Yeah. We've broke bread over this where you're like, I can't tell which way is up. And those moments are most of it. And when you look back on those moments, you're like, wow, like that was the thing that built the character that had me prepared for what I was coming into. And I would also say, with the optimism, you have to have a resilience. Mm. Like, there's a level of anti-fragility that you have to have on the continent because there's micro frictions. But if you take a step back, and one of your guests has said this, it's not just the potential, but it's the actualization. And we are seeing it, and it's constantly happening. But we are on the forefront. Just like what you all are doing with Afropolitan, like, you're building the platform that will create opportunities for creators in the future that will have no idea the amount of stress and frustration that you all had went to. Even just all the things I've seen you do today and the grace that you both handle it with, that poise is so necessary because as an entrepreneur, most people are looking at you for the first time when they click on that thing or when they interact with you or when they talk to you and get that coffee. And my constant reminder to all the entrepreneurs that are coming after me, everyone that I've bought lunch for, coffee, angel invested in, connected to someone, is like, someone did this for me. Like, Fred Swanaker did this for me. Acha Leke did this for me. So you have to do it for the next generation. And if we continue to have that mindset, you'll be so optimistic about it because you'll continuously see all these little signs of things just beautifully unfolding for you. So I know somebody might be like, well, you need to learn how to like code in Java or Python. Like those are the things that come along with it. But the mindset and the framework are really important. And lastly, I'd say as Africans, tapping into our storytelling ability to motivate people, like the amount of times Acha has sent me voice notes and things that I've been like 4 or 5 minute long. We've sent long and they inspire me, and what y'all do inspires me. So being a storyteller can make people think something that doesn't exist can exist one day. And that's the beauty of Africa, is that there's so many things waiting to exist and people waiting to experience them.
So I want you to tell our audience like your background, right? Where in Africa you're from, because we're talking about this. If people ain't look at you and be like, well, I'm not sure where he's from. But so talk about that. But I want you to tie it back to you grew up in America like us. So how did you get to Africa? Like, how did you make the leap of like, you know what? I'm just going to take myself to Africa and start building.
Yeah. So this is a real deep story for me. And I told you about it. So I'm Eritrean. Very proud to be Eritrean. My parents had to leave during the Civil War. So my grandfather was one of the first Africans in the 60s to go to Harvard Law. He went back to Eritrea, was working on the Declaration of Independence. He was a judge. And during the war, there was obviously things that happened. He was targeted and he was killed. He was assassinated. He was never found. And my father...
Never found. Till this day.
My father, who... It was my mother's father, my grandfather on my mom's side. So my dad went to find out who killed his father-in-law and where he was at. And my father ran the largest power plant in Eritrea. It was a hydroelectric. And apparently his life was put in danger. So then my grandmother was like, look, you have to leave. And she sent my uncle also. And they walked, hitchhiked, were smuggled out of Eritrea. And through an odyssey of a journey, actually were political refugees in America. It's kind of wild. It was actually it was a Republican that I still have the letter that signed the asylum letter for my father. And we were in Virginia, and that's where I was born. Technically, I was born in D.C. Through and through, I went to Howard. And I studied investment banking, studied finance and went to investment banking. And at the time, all this stuff is so deep and like emotional for me. But my father was battling cancer, and I was going back and forth being in banking and all this. And I wanted to do stuff on the continent. And after he passed, it was kind of like a moment of like, oh, like life is very finite. And I remember my entire childhood, my parents were just like, you are Eritrean. Like, America's giving us this opportunity and we're grateful for it. And I've had a lovely experience and been able to benefit from it. But you have a responsibility to go back to the continent. They reminded me of that. They took me when I was a kid. So I got an opportunity to go build an accelerator for Fred Swanaker and Achaleke. And Fred was a serial entrepreneur in education. He was like, we need to do something for the people that we educate to actually have a reason to be on the continent and build. And Acha, he's a technocrat, he's a chairman of McKinsey. And together they had African Leadership Network. So they needed to get a finance person to do an accelerator. And here's a fun fact about this. One of the companies in that portfolio was founded by GB. He hasn't really talked about this, but he ended up building Flutterwave afterwards. And he was like, well, the first company couldn't exist because Flutterwave didn't. And it was so crazy to, because we used to call him Olubenga back then. And I was just like, oh, this is over a decade ago. To see that, to see him become what he's become, is the validation of the thesis of why I left. And there was momentum, and you're young and you're just optimistic, and you're like, man, can I just add a little bit to the Africa Rise story? So life has a way of testing you, either having nothing happen at all or everything happen at once. And for me, everything happened at once.
Yeah.
So that was the best decision I've ever made.
Jacob, I've been looking forward to this conversation. Obviously, you and I have so many deep talks. We were just, you know, we had another long talk in San Francisco while we're out there, right? And I want this episode to really be a masterclass for what it really takes to be a founder on the continent. Your perspective is very unique, but I want to talk about it feels like there are certain classes of founders who started the journey, right? I think you moved back 2014.
Yep.
Yes. And so you've been there from the early, it's basically 10 plus years now. So you've seen some of the early founders, you've seen the cycles come and go, you've seen the fundraising cycles come and go. I want us to talk about what it feels like, because obviously, you know, I had this conversation in San Francisco about how many founders have had to shut up shop recently, mm-hmm. right? And what that feels like, especially in terms of the circle of people you started this journey with. I think building a company sometimes is a 4-year journey, 6-year journey, up 10-year journey, 20-year journey, right? What were some of the macros that affected some of the founders across Africa that you've seen in the last 4 or 5 years that led to some of the startups shutting down?
Yeah. So for the audience, I would say when we all kind of came, like shout out to the OGs before us, like Ori from Kenya, she's like the grandmother of tech in Africa. E, you know, he was building, like, I remember when I landed, I was hearing those names of like, they've been doing it. Like they've really been doing it. When I landed though, that was the Africa Rise story. That was when Lions on the Move, which Acha and Mackenzie wrote, where you saw all this foreign capital coming in, DFI capital coming in. And also there was very low interest rates. So the world was looking for alpha and everybody was like, oh, Africa has these young population. And the diaspora was like, we need to go, like, you know what I mean? Like we need to be there right now. And that led to this huge run up. And then the ZIRP era kind of collapsed, money kind of pulled back. And a consequence of, it was really poor leadership throughout the continent, where we didn't have food security. We had a lot of issues when Russia gets sanctioned and their wheat now is going to be more priced and we can't get it in Kenya. That makes everyday people's lives go up. Fuel prices go up. And then
we also had COVID.
And we had COVID. And unfortunately, which this is like super nerdy. I was a left fin banker. I worked in debt financing. Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, South Africa all issued euro bonds. So for everybody else, it's just like, imagine you're earning in one currency and your credit card bill is in a currency that is higher valued. And then the spread went really rapid around like 22, 23. Nigeria's currency went from like 400 or something to one to 1650 to one. That means if you're a startup and you grew 300%, you still shrank because you have to report in dollars.
Yeah.
Imagine how hard that is. So combining that, the political instability, seeing everyday people really struggling, then you're like, wow, the market starts to constrain. And then you had the AI boom, which completely made a polar world, right? You have a bipolar world. You have China and you have America. And majority of the capitals went to either one. You have a lot of startups that ended up dying on the vine. They didn't get to see their true potential. And if you look at the companies in America, like even Replit, which is everybody loves Replit right now. Replit's like knocking on the door of like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like
it's been around for a minute.
They're like, oh, they got to 100 million in 1 year. It's like after they pivoted like a couple times, but they had backers that kept investing in them. And I would say the vintage that I came in with, right? Like people from the 2014 era, we all worked, built all this momentum. And it just like the bottom kind of fell out. And then it started to see like just no kind of opportunity to consolidate where there should have been a better M&A consolidation starting to happen. Now we just saw with Mono and Flutterway, which is great. But I think that would have created a better talent density. And then it would have made a better argument for people to be like, you know, we should keep funding these companies because some companies were just companies not meant to die. There's a lot of good companies that died on the vine. And I mean, it sounds cliche, but it starts with leadership and it kind of goes all the way down. So some of those factors really, really hurt us and set us back.
What were some of the challenges, especially with parity? Talk to our audience about the problem that you saw that you were trying to solve with parity, mm-hmm. And what those challenges, if those challenges still exist today.
Oh, yeah. So the name is Parity because we're trying to solve the asymmetry of knowledge and resources. So similar to AngelList, we wanted to use community to connect investors to founders that they might not normally see, that they might be biased towards, against. And then those founders are going to raise money. 90 to 95% of the money you raise Series A or under is going to hire people. So the best way to create jobs is to make sure the creative people that are going to build companies get access to capital. And then once they do, give them access to talent. What ended up happening was we built a significant algorithm because we had the person that might be an investor, that might be a customer, that might be an employee doing pitch reviews. So we ended up getting, I think about 3,200 to do pitch reviews. And I think like about 1,500 companies have raised like over 200K or something like that. We accurately predicted 200 million in capital raise 5 months before it happened. Companies like LemFi had went through pitch review, mm-hmm. companies that were just really impressive and then also went on to be successful and hire. And the whole point was, these are great companies. Like Jack Ma at Alibaba got passed on so many times because he didn't look the part. And then for the female founders, 33% of the founders founding teams that we predicted to be successful had a female in it, yep. that went on to raise money. And we would, and the whole point was this: altruism is great, but I've worked on Wall Street. The best way to convince the money, because it's the money is coming from the West, is like, your bias is costing you money, because the entry price for a company before it goes to YC is a lot lower than after it goes to YC. 12 of the companies, we predicted 12 companies going to YC before they got in. And we're like, if you had just invested in this founder, if you invested in that founder, the difference of the entry would have created maybe one or two turns on your multiple. Like, and also that founder would look at you completely differently, because they'd say, oh, you backed me before YC, so I know you really believe in me. And then pretty much we went from 5 billion in capital allocated on the continent to 1.8, I think was the best estimate when it kind of bottomed out. No more investing. So that cycle was just not something to focus on. We focused on talent, and we used the same model, a community to pretty much allow you to monetize your network. So if you're hiring and I'm like, man, I know Chica's great for this and I recommend her, and you hire and she gets past probation, that was the critical part. If you get past probation, I know you can do the job. You get the interview, you get, you know, the CV pulled back, that's one thing. But working 3 months validates skills. And I got to work in education, and I was like, well, the best thing that we can do is show that we can validate that there is talent here. And the best way to get that distribution is a community. And we built a 70,000 person community across 40 countries. And we actually have the largest skills verification model in Africa. 95% of the companies that hired the candidates got past probation. But the challenge was, once the money dries up, the companies dry up.
Yep.
So then there's no jobs. So then who are you placing with who? Right? Like the beauty of building parity was that there never went a day without getting a message from someone saying, God bless you, I put food on the table because I got $1,000 bounty because I got this, or I got a job, or my friend got me a job, or because you have salary transparency, we had a rule, you have to post a salary on our job board. You can't make it. Cause normally, you know what would happen. It's like, what did you make at your last job? All right, 10% on that.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're keeping people like stuck, cause you know, it's a buyer's market. But they got to the point where there was so little jobs. So the question was, do we want to make this an artisanal business? Cause it can just be a small like community staffing model, or there's a bigger, the data play that is currently still kind of in play. You know, I'm talking to my partners around this. This parity is no longer like the focus for me at this point, but there are some people that are interested in the data, the whole company. My whole thing with parity is that we have a net negative of 8 million jobs in Africa every year. We're missing that, right? Like there's 8 million jobs that we're just not making.
Yeah.
And it's compounding. Mm-hmm. And Africa average age is like 20, right? So you have all these young people that have energy and nothing to do with it. That's either a huge opportunity or incredible liability. Yeah. It's one or the other. And I, through unfortunate circumstances, what happened to my family in Eritrea and et cetera, I had this privileged life that was born in America. Mm. I had two parents that, you know, were extremely focused on education and got me into a good career. On the continent, there's so many people that could accomplish amazing things, but there has to be, you got to get some doors open. So that was a challenge.
Etche, remember that time I walked into a bank, I'm not going to give the name, and I asked them for $1,000 and they told me no, they cannot withdraw any dollar from me. And I was so upset. And I just remember asking everybody, how can I solve this issue? And I'm so happy that I finally have V-Band to finally solve this issue for me.
You know, the thing is, you should be able to have access to your money anywhere in the world when you get paid, right? So I'm grateful we have VBAN as a sponsor for the Afropolitan podcast. With VBAN, you're able to get paid in foreign currencies, whether it's pounds, USD, euros, and you can actually spend it in local currency as well. Now, you're also able to get a virtual card, which you can use to spend in and pay for services across the world, right? So I'm grateful to have VBAN as a sponsor.
You can download it on the Apple or Google Play Store. And remember, when you sign up, you use Afropolitan so they know you came from this podcast.
I wanted to circle back to fundraising, right? I remember we raised in 2022, but at the time I had a couple of founder friends who were raising as well, but they were maybe doing their next raise. So maybe going from C to like a Series A. And on their end of things, and this is before the ZERP era ended, but this was when the Money Gusher was still going, they were felt that they had good enough numbers to go raise. Again, I remember they felt very confident. They were like, yo, look, I'm raising my next round. I'm very confident I'm going to close. And then something happened during that period that was very interesting that when I reflect back on, I realized, I don't know, did you ever watch the show Silicon Valley? Mm-hmm. So remember what he says, it's better to be pre-revenue than revenue? I'm telling you, as a founder, I saw that happen in real time. So you had companies that had raised before and were about to go raise again, but a newer company that was then coming in saying, hey, we're going to be the Coinbase of Africa, or we're going to be the FTX of Africa, and they don't have any revenue, it's newer, would raise like
crazy
amounts. And then the ones who are already existing would struggle to raise because now we know what your numbers are. You can't come saying you're going to be Coinbase of Africa. Like, it's not looking like Coinbase right now, right? And so I want you to basically break down what that looks like, especially because, again, a lot of upcoming founders are going to be watching this interview. What does that fundraising process look like, especially from a storytelling perspective?
Yeah.
And did you also make that observation during that period? Like, why is that so challenging for founders who are looking to raise that next round to get to the next metric for an investor?
Okay. So, I mean, there is the Africa tax.
Yeah.
Like, there is that. And at that time, in like 22, where we were like, is it that bad? Like, you know, remember, everybody was like, it was spooky. Yeah. It was like, oh, is it really over? Like, are we about to go into a really dark period? At that time, you had to make a choice. Are you going to try to be default to live? Do you remember default to live?
That was the word
in everything. It was default to live.
Yeah.
Or are you going to be the pure play to borrow from Silicon Valley, like pre-revenue? And I remember we were all trying to figure it out because we were all like, you know, we had the Pando debt. We had the Pando debt chat. Yeah. We were all like talking.
Sorry, before you go on, I don't want to cut you off. Could you explain what default to live is for the audience?
Yeah.
We know what it means, but could you explain it?
So default to live means that by virtue of your business revenue, you are going to stay in business. You don't need any more investment from outside capital. Now, everybody's going to be like, well, that's obvious. Like, why would you not do that? Like, because pre-AI, to build products, it took, like, to get a prototype, this is the crazy thing. To do a prototype would be like 3 months, and it'd probably be like a front end, a full stack, and a hybrid PM designer, right? Like, that took so long. So if you're investing in building a tech company, your focus is either I'm building the tech, which will then allow me to have like a hockey stick growth when I turn revenue on, or I'm building revenue and I'm going to slowly kind of like chip away at it and I'll be default live. It's never been done at the same time. No one's ever done it at the same time. So what we were forced to do at that period was try to be sexy enough that you're like, oh, they have this amazing tech and I can see it. It's working. Da da da. And they have this revenue. Whereas in Silicon Valley, that was never the question, right? Mm. So people were getting more revenue in there. And they're like, yeah, Series A now is going to be 3 million. C to Series A is where like there was the biggest drop from. It's usually like 95% don't make it to seed. And then like 75 or 80% don't make it to A. But the bar went from, if you look like your revenue is growing, we're backing you because we're not, it doesn't need to be 3 million. 3 million just became an arbitrary number that I believe was thrown out because they're like, this is the easy way for me to say no so that you can't get mad at me. I'm going to show some comps, but as we all know, like
Africa tax,
it's just, yeah. So it got to that point with a lot of people and we all tried to like bug it out. We're all like, let me build product and revenue and expand into new markets so I can not have like a liability of one market being 80% of my revenue. That's when, if you can't do that just from a seed round. Like, you need follow-on capital. It's never been done before. No, whenever people say that, like, just go look at the tape. And that's an unfortunate thing that happened to us at that time.
And I want you to talk about the human capital. We have a very young amount of people in Africa. Are there opportunities you feel people still are not looking at? And I know one of our guests talked about AI, and I know we're going to have an extensive conversation where they feel like, you know, all the models have already been built. So if Africa is trying to get in that race, we're not in that race, right? But we do have an opportunity to be at the application layer. And he talked about marrying the youth with AI applications and being able to export that talent. But do you think there's other opportunities, especially with this huge youth population, that Africans should be tapping and building?
Yeah. So this... Like the deep part of it is, like, AI won't get better without humans training it. It went from, like, drawing a square around a box or like a fire hydrant and being like, that's a fire hydrant, to can you write a physics equation that will stump GPT, right? Like, that's kind of where we're at with, like, the RLHF, which is reinforcement learning, human feedback loop, evaluations or evals that you're hearing. If you look at how much India is benefiting from this, the India Institute of Technology, though, like, sharp, they're sharp, right? There's so much that's happening there. Africa has 22% more English speakers, and we have a much better time zone to America. So all the frontier labs should be considering us, and because of the youth, and because that there's going to be a nonstop wave of people looking for work, right? Now, the way I see it kind of compounding for us is, right now, GDP per capita in Africa is like 1900, right? Like, in some markets is better, some markets is worse, right? But, like, that's not a lot of money. Eventually, the consumer spend will go up. I know Tayo was talking about that also. As that consumer spend goes up, people are going to want more contextualized models. So imagine if you're calling the power company or MTN or whatever it is, like, the different dialects and accents, that needs to be, like, you need to do evals for that. You need to make sure you're training the model to that. I think that the application of that, someone in Africa is going to build that, like, call centers for African customers, that will happen. The immediate opportunity right now is actually building in Africa for the world. And you just have a huge amount of talent that is, like, digitally native. Like, everybody has a phone. Like, they all know how to use phones. They all have access to it. I think that that's a really cool opportunity in AI right now. And if you're building, if you're doing evals or, like, reinforcement learning for, like, an accounting model, someone's like Shortcut AI is like an Excel AI company. Eventually you could get a job and be able to apply that actual AI model on the job. Like, if you're an accountant major in Kenya, it's like 24 months before you get a job, if that, right? With an accounting degree. And you could actually train an accounting model that's really contextualized, especially for, like, the difference between GAAP and IFRS across the continent and all these kind of different things. And then go get a job at Accenture or KPMG, which are on the continent. And, like, hey, you know, those models that we're trying to help our clients use, like, I train those models. That's like an entry level job. That'd be really good. And it hasn't been done yet. Like, there's obviously, like, Parity could have been used for that. And I think there's, I think we're just scratching the surface on there, because there has to be a step functional change for the way AI gets better if it's going to not be using humans. For now, it seems like the way it's growing is it's just going to get smarter humans to train it on harder problems. And there's so many, like, Kenyans and Nigerians have been doing PhD program work for, like, people in Ivy League schools. Like, the articles have been written out, like, they get subcontract to do their papers, right? Yeah. If you can write a thesis for a PhD or a master's student at Yale, you can train these models. Like, you can work on these models.
Interesting. So, yeah. Is there, but do you think there's any AI companies in the West looking at Africa as a place to, you know, I know there's been conversations around, like, data centers, because you're going to need way more data centers. And I think obviously Africa has the arable land to do these things. But have you heard any chatter around that? Like, okay, how do we export some of what we need to be on the continent of Africa?
They use this for labeling already.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm wondering if there's different.
They use it for, like, low level.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It still feels very low. I'm thinking, like, at the higher.
Not yet. Well, like, I've had some conversations with some people, but like the people that are doing it very quietly. Yeah. They're doing it. Like I heard something the other day. I was like, you shouldn't eat. You shouldn't talk when you're eating. And there's like a saying in the sense of like, if you're doing well, some people are doing well and they're very quietly building that business right now. Mm. There's a huge opportunity though, but it's like day one. And I think that the West will eventually notice that because India is going to have a lot. I mean, like the cost of having India as your back office has went up tremendously. Mm. So it's coming, right? It's just, we need to be able to pull it. Stuff like this is really important. Getting the narrative out there and saying like, I helped build a university in Africa. Like I lived in Mauritius. We helped build African Leadership University there. Like one of the most proud moments I had was like one of the students I mentored there was like, I'm going to build a startup. His name's Joseph. And he went to build Rousey. And he's like raised, I think over $12 million. And he hired someone through Parity who ended up being his community manager. Like Joseph went on to be an entrepreneur, but there is so many other people that didn't get that opportunity that are very smart that can do more than draw a box around a fire hydrant. Yeah. Unfortunately, like that's the low level data labeling is all we've gotten so far.
You know, with the companies like Andela, mm-hmm. I remember at the time I would say to myself, I understand the arbitrage opportunity here, right? Mm-hmm. You're able to train. You're saying talent is everywhere. Opportunity is not. But then we live in a world where technology doesn't wait for our continent to catch up before it moves, right? And I remember being very awake when, I think this was November 2022, when ChatGPT came to the surface. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Because then the justification for sending those jobs to Africa now starts to reduce, right? Because mm-hmm. why would you even do any of that if you could pay $20 a month to the AI and it's doing almost everything, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted you to speak a little bit more to that, which is, what is that gap? And what is the sense of urgency we as Africans need to have where, even right now, I was talking to a friend where we can no longer even depend on a white man's benevolence, right? Like that era has come and gone, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure you're seeing all the rhetoric on Twitter and you're seeing all the rhetoric on the world stage. And you're saying to yourself, like, damn, like, there's no more sympathy, right? Like, we got to catch up because that boat is leaving. Yeah. And if we're not on that boat, by the time it's time to get on the Avatar boat, it is just what it is, right? But I wanted you to give us your thoughts on that, which is technology hasn't waited for Africa's progress to catch up, right? Mm-hmm. And it will keep on going. So what does that look like for our continent if we don't, like, start to really ramp up immediately?
What does it look like if we don't ramp up immediately? It is a dire situation where there is a tremendous amount of young people that have no access to work, but have access to information mm. on their phone where they're watching the world prosper while we suffer. Yeah. That is a very bleak future. I don't believe that's what happens, but that is what would happen in that scenario. And there's that saying, it's like, it's not our fault, but it's our responsibility.
Yeah.
You know? And in that regard, I think, like, not to put it back on y'all, but like to creativity, like storytelling, like I have a tattoo of a baobab on my, my leg. And like, man, like Nigerians also are so poetic when you speak, just thinking about that and how your creativity can be expanded through AI. But then people are like, yeah, you can make like stories. It's like, no. Like I've shown you with Quill, it's like you could have a meeting and say, cool, you now made this presentation, send that to this person. Oh, now make this website, now do this. Like the things that would have limited Africans are going to now create a more like leveled playing field and opportunity, and the cost of compute will go down. The cost of energy will go down. I think what's critical for us right now is to be able to harness what's above us, which is the sun, and be able to use that to at least get us like stable break even on calories. Like we need to, like, seriously, like if you can break even on calories, you have like now a more sovereign state, right? And you can compound that by now building other things. And I think that using solar, combining that with the AI opportunity, there's data centers, there's going to be arable land that we can grow. That will create just a general like default alive for the countries in Africa. Once you have that, I think a lot more people are going to see the opportunity to stay greater than the risk to stay. And then you start thinking like, what am I building? How you start thinking in decades. And I think that that's like a cultural mind shift that that happens. And it is a leader. Like you need leadership to kind of usher that in. And as far as like an individual, what they could do is like being a creative, telling stories. Like I remember when I moved to Joburg at that time, rest in peace, AKA was it when it came to African like hip hop, right? And then here came Burna and Wiz and like Davido. And you're just, I was at a party in the Hamptons in like 2017 and somebody was playing Burna Boy or Wizkid. I was like, how did you
know about this?
How did you know about this? It was a
deep cut at the time.
Yeah. I was like, wait. And I was looking around. I was like, this is it. This is the right here. Like being able to export
culture,
taste, things that people connect with. That's the human experience is what's going to be special, right? If you can write and you can write something that someone will connect with, like AI can help you edit and scale that and make the image or make the reel. And like, I remember you explained it to me. You're like, this is how I got the thumbnail right. I was like, oh, I was like, you put your 10,000 hours in just to get that thumbnail. And it shows though. There's going to be so many African creatives that are going to be able to harness that. And I think that, I mean, if you think about it purely from a financial standpoint, you could also look at it as like you're exporting this culture and taste and you're importing dollars. And out of 54 countries on the continent, I think like 53 are net importer of dollars. Like we're strangled by the dollar, right? As long as the dollar hegemony stands, it's like we need it. And if you're creating and exporting, your costs are low here, but the world is galvanized by what you have because AI is one thing, but nothing beats the human experience. Nothing is like, wow, I know your story. Like when I hear it, I'm just like, I connect with it. It doesn't matter how great the story is. If it's AI to me, if it has a little AI marker, which I think we'll get to that point, it won't be the same because I won't be able to see myself in the room where you were telling me about pitching your talent tech startup when you were at 500 startups, right? Like I can see you there, right? And that's why I can see you here. And I'm like, that's why you're shining. I know that arc and it makes me connect and it makes me root for you. And I think that African creators have a huge opportunity to do that. Like, look at the world. Look at how they're consuming it already.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I even want to double click into this thing because before we even get into the AI, because I know there's some people that have some challenges with AI and, you know, all the different things. But I also tell people that's the opportunity. And that's the opportunity I want to see more Africans lean into with the creativity. We literally just came from a creative conference. And I actually think what's going to be interesting is that people, with the advent of AI, people are going to want more human experiences, things that only humans can do, right? I think that's why events are going to be important. I think that's why we might go back into analog, certain things like writing letters, like things that only we could do. And I do want to see more Africans lean into that, like not the most obvious thing, but like, what's that analog thing that like reminds people you're human? Because nowadays when I scroll online, I'm like, is this AI? Like, I'm not like sometimes I have to ask Eche, like, wait, is this like, is this real or not? You know, even there's an influencer who has 2 million followers on TikTok. And now this is the dark side of AI is that she's, I guess they're positioning her as Sudanese, right? Just the way she looks and all that. And we don't know who's behind that.
Oh, so she's not real.
No, it's AI. And like what they're doing, and like you, and at first, like you look at it and you're like there, it's there getting better.
Yeah.
It's getting better and better. Like 6 months ago.
Banana Banana is crazy.
Yeah. In fact, I have a friend who works with Gemini, and so she was like, just upload your photo and you can change your pose. And I was like, really? And so I uploaded my photo and I said, like, you know, change my pose. And it changed my pose.
Yeah.
And it was pretty close.
It's
like
almost there.
It was like if I post on stories, you would just think that's my picture. You didn't realize I didn't take that picture.
Absolutely.
So it's getting, I think AI is getting very interesting.
But the analog thing that you mentioned, I like to write. So I also have friends that are writers and I'm lucky that I do. But a friend of mine, like just recently, wrote me a letter. It was just like, oh, this is so nice. I forgot. I was like, this is actually.
Like a physical letter?
Yeah. Like he took a picture of it and sent it to me. Sure. I was like, hey, how are you doing? We haven't caught up. Da, da, da. He was like, oh, like, it's like, wow. I love that because maybe I'm just like a sentimental person, but I was just like, oh, I know you were sitting there like writing that out. And like, that image, you know what I mean? That comes to mind. Like, or like if you've ever been with someone that like will write you, like I've had partners that would like write me like little sticky notes or whatever like that. And that's really sweet and touching. And like, these are like small things. You're like, oh, thank you. Like she did the, I think that will expand. That might even become like a service.
Mm-hmm.
Like you might be like, I would love to get a letter from someone that is living this kind of life. And I would just love to hear what their day is like today. That could be something that could happen, right? Like that would be amazing. Cause it's like renting a person's like story for a day. Yeah. And it's you cherish that. It's precious, right? Whereas AI can make a million of those, but you know, it didn't live that. Mm. And there's a difference there. I think like that's the premium experience, is the texture that goes into that. It's like, I know what went into this, so I appreciate this so much more. At least maybe that's just how I look at it.
Yeah. It's funny because one of my favorite quotes is, you can be knowledgeable with another man's knowledge, but you cannot be wise with another man's wisdom. Right. Mm. And the reason for that is I feel like that applies to AI, which is AI is going to deluge us with so much information, so much knowledge, but it's not going to make you have wisdom.
Mm-mm.
Right? Because wisdom is much more of a lived human experience. And so you might have all the knowledge. You can know how everything is cooked, but do you actually have the earned wisdom that comes over time?
Yeah.
But now let's transition to the positive side of AI, because yes, we obviously have a lot of people in the audience and in our viewership who are amazed or intrigued about this new technology. I know I put my dad onto it, changed his life, mm-hmm. right? And you get to see what it looks like when you're like, I see people struggling with stuff. I'm like, oh, you don't know that the AI can do it. Okay, come sit down. Let me onboard you onto it, right? And it just completely transforms how they see everything from then on. Let's talk about your journey with AI and also about Quill too, so that for our viewers, they understand what's now possible with the technology as well. So what's your journey been in AI so far?
So it started with Parity, because we were like, hey, we have all this data and now there's this AI wave. So how do we get better insights? And my advisor at Parity, who's my partner now at Quill, Michael Dougherty, he was, you know, number two to Naval, Angelus. You've both met Michael.
He's
brilliant. Like he's a super kind Midwest guy and is very smart. And he was telling me about Quill. And I was like, why are you building a note taker? I was like, I didn't get it at first. And I was like, what are you up to? It's like, there's got to be something deeper there. Because I was, you know, when you're building a company, you're so focused on one thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's like, yo, I'm working on this thing. It's interesting. Da, da, da. And he's like, how are you doing with Parity? I was like, well, I think like I might be pausing on this, or, you know, maybe years later, I'll come back to it. Who knows? But I'm kind of open. He was like, well, do you want to help me? I'm like kind of building this and I need some help. It's like, sure. And that's when I got in, and it's actually great because he didn't sell it. He was just kind of like, hey, like check it out. Mm. And I checked it out and I was like, wow, this is really good. I was like, why is it transcribing so fast? He was like, oh, cause it's local. It's on your actual application. It's not, you don't have to wait for the latency for the cloud. I was like, oh, so where is all the transcripts? He was like, it's on your device. I was like, I like that. I was like, okay, so this is not like just in some server somewhere or whatever. He's like, no. And I was like, can I prompt it? How does it work? And you can prompt it and you can actually push to all your different tools. So to frame it for the audience, I would say Quill is an agentic note taker, where a lot of people focus on like what you said. We focus on the next step, right? Workflow automation. And the same way Replit and Lovable and Cursor have created this huge leverage for people that are coding, we want that for thought workers.
Yeah.
So like we showed
we
you.
Use it.
Yeah, we use it.
Thank
we
you.
Use it. I just used it like 30 minutes ago.
Thank you.
My agent meeting.
Them next steps be helpful.
You know, you take a call and you're like, all right, I now have to look at this, the notes from the transcript or whatever. You know, you just prompted, hey, Quill, what was the most important thing in that? It's like, here's everything that was important. Here's your to-do. Here's who said, here's what. Do you want me to send it? And you just say yes. And it'll just send it out through email. push it to Notion. But what we're about to launch is our agent, which is what you all got to see. And the agent is an agent embedded in your note taker. So imagine if you're a salesperson and you just had 10 sales calls. The bane of your existence, if you work in sales, is updating CRM, just like a VC. Update CRM. Who did you talk to? You just ask your agent, hey, get all the conversations I had today, update my CRM for me. And it'll push to your CRM, push to your Notion. It'll create a PRD. You can ask Quill, say, hey, I had a conversation today with Chica and Eche, and we're thinking about this collaboration. I want to build a prototype or a landing page of a website. It's like, yeah, cool. I can use the Claude integration and I can just go build a prototype right there in Claude because it has connection to Quill. And if you're talking to a sponsor maybe, and they're like, hey, we have this idea. We love Afropolitan. You're like, cool. Just think out loud. You have Quill running. They just talk and talk and talk.
Just think out loud. It's crazy.
I'm serious. I'm like, because they know that note taker's on.
Yeah.
And then as they're talking, tell your agent, hey, push this to Gamma and make a deck. So it's going to extract the notes from the call while you're in the call and then push it to Gamma. And Gamma is your AI, like PowerPoint deck maker. And now once you do that a couple of times, you're like, make this a template. And I'm like, cool. So every time you talk to a sponsor, it will be extracting insights from that call, making a deck while you're on the call. And immediately as the call ends, you're going to send them the deck. They're going to be like, how in the world did you do this?
Yeah.
You know?
I think for people who, because we're super early adopters of AI, you know, we had this whole conversation. I think it has 10x'd our leverage hugely, right? But I think so many times I still see people respond to it from a place of fear.
Yeah.
And I keep saying, like, now, like, if someone calls me on, like, WhatsApp and is trying to have a whole meeting, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I don't have my note taker here. You think I'm about to use my brain and remember everything you just said?
Nah.
I'm not going to do that. hop on a Google Meet, hop on a Zoom, and then let me have my Quill on here taking the notes, right? Because then you're like, okay.
Did you know you can take... Quill WhatsApp on desktop.
No.
If you take a desktop call, you can record on Quill.
That's true. Because it does. It actually
because it's local. Phone. That's why it works on Zoom, Hangouts, whatever. It's not like it's not limited to anything. If you start any audio on your desktop, it could record it.
Yeah, yes. It immediately comes on like hello.
Yep.
Yeah. No. So I think for me, there something I've been talking to Chica about is so many people I know who have discernment and taste. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, this is the part I definitely want to get your thoughts on, mm-hmm. right? Which was in the world where AI can almost do anything. You have the information, you have the knowledge, you have the tasks. It can do all the mundane tasks. I was telling Chica that I believe that the next level up, especially when you're thinking about hiring people, is discernment, judgment, mm-hmm. and taste, right? What do you think about that?
I 100% agree. And thank you for saying that, because when you were earlier saying you can't get wisdom from someone else's wisdom, you can't get taste from reading or you have to live life.
Yes.
Taste comes from experience and perspective and like interaction, like to be in communion with each other. Like you're going to experience these things and you're like, oh, why does that shit look at it like that? Why does Chica respond like that? How do they? Oh, it's because of the way. And I only know that because I'm experiencing you. I'm here in your space in Lagos. And I'm like, oh, I live this. Someone could tell me all of this, but I wouldn't have that taste. I wouldn't be able to see it because I wouldn't actually know what it looked like. And I wouldn't be able to put my own fingerprint on it. Right. I can never have your taste, but I could take yours and add mine to it. And in the world of AI, when everything else gets to reduce to the margins, taste is going to be so unique because your perspective is what people are going to seek, right? And that's what's going to allow you to build things, because before it was so hard to just build it.
Yep.
It didn't even matter what you were building. I give you the example with like Lovable and Replit. If you wanted to build a decent, like fully functioning prototype, maybe not like server and all the other stuff is like really running, but you have like basic front end, back end buttons and all that stuff work, that would used to cost you like roughly about like $140,000. Cause
dollars.
It would be like, yeah. Cause it would be probably, you'd be running maybe a $40,000 budget for like 3 to 4 months to get that thing really, really like going. Not like just a viewable prototype, but something that really can be shown in a demo and investors would be like, okay, I see where you're going. I'm backing this. Like the pre-seed thing that you get backed on. I do that on my phone. I do that on my phone all the time.
Yeah.
This is how I introduce AI to people. Is like, I'm like, what are you thinking about? What's something that you're working on? Mm. And they'll tell me like, you could be a teacher. I'm like, cool. I'll go to like Quill, maybe like pull out my Quill and record. Like, I want to build make a PRD, make a PRD. Then I'll take the PRD and I'll give it to Claude. And I'm like, give me an artifact, which is a prototype or Replit or Lovable. I can get all that done in like 15 minutes.
Crazy.
Wow.
That's like an crazy
app. Have you done that for some like someone had a random app?
He showed it. Oh, he showed me. He showed us.
Oh, when we had dinner,
yeah.
You weren't there.
Yeah, I did that. He showed me.
Because this is what I mean. I was like, I know people look at me crazy when I say that. Yeah. And I'm like, nah, it's fine. I'm going to show you right now. He's like, right now? I was like, no, right now. So luckily the restaurant was empty.
He whipped out the laptop.
Yeah, I'm a nerd. Like, I'm getting right to the action. I'm getting busy. So I just recorded it. We started talking. And then I took the notes. I asked Quill. I was like, Quill knows how I like to make my PRDs or a product request document. It makes my PRD the way I like it. And it also knows like he's going to probably want to have like React as a front end because it's going to easily go to my actual engineers that would build it. And we just came up with an idea and built it just like that. Yeah. Wow. That was a $20 a month subscription. That's it. You paid $20 a month and you got that. So now it's not about building. It's what are you building?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what to build?
You have taste.
Do you have taste? Yeah. Do you have taste? Do you know what to build? Like the ultimate taste person is like Steve Jobs, right? Like, that is the tastemaker of, I know, like, this is where it is, right? And like a lot of us delude ourselves into thinking that we have that kind of taste. But if you are someone that lives an interesting life and you surround yourself with interesting people. And it doesn't mean like big people. Like, you guys are like famous in the sense of like, and I'm not trying to say like, you gotta have friends. Like, it'd be great. It's very great. But just like, you could be like, yo man, what do you do on the weekends? You do pottery?
Variety.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like, you know, you do woodwork. That's interesting. And that person's going to tell you about a trip that they took, and that's going to shape your perspective. And then you might want to take that trip. And that now is a part of like your lore and things that you think about. That is what's going to allow you to build things that people care about when the price of building things go to zero.
Yeah.
once the cost of labor to build technology has reduced down to that, then it's only about taste.
And judgment.
It's just about taste and discernment and judgment. Yeah.
Let's talk about layoffs. And the reason why is Chica used to be a technical recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
And I have definitely seen her make a $1 million offer to an engineer like way back in the day. The reason why I'm saying this is you just said you were able to build an app for $20 a month, right? Where do you honestly say, and the other angle to this, we were talking to our friend Tayo. And he was saying that he believes that in 3 years, he's a principal architect engineer. In 3 years, his job is gone.
He's redundant now.
He's redundant, right? Mm. He believes that because he's already using agents and he's using agents with AI. And he was saying that he feels like in 1 year, at least at the company he's at, you don't need to hire any senior engineers anymore. And then in two years.
No,
he said 1 year senior.
Oh.
Yeah, 1 year senior, 2 years staff and 3 year principal architect engineer based on what he's seeing and what he's seen in his company. The reason why I'm bringing this up is there is no world, there is no English, there is no enough poetry in the world that will make any company say, why would I keep paying $1 million for a human when the agent can do this for $20 or $30 a month? In that sort of world, though, what advice do you have for people who are coming from the white collar situations? I do think it's something that's still not landed. Every time I go back to San Francisco, I know people who understand AI is here, but they're not making the calculation that I feel like they should be making. I'll explain what I mean. When I was in law school, prior to law school, I was an A student, right? So my bachelor's A student, I knew what it felt like to have a high GPA. My master's magna cum laude, I'm top 10% in the class, right? And that was my academic career. When I got to law school, I couldn't crack top 10. Now, my ego could have been like, yo, keep pushing and then figure this out. But I was like, no, we got to accept the reality. You are around the best out here, right? So you got to go figure out what else you're best at, because it's definitely not going to be law.
Yeah.
So you got to leave this law school thing ever alone and then go figure out what else you're going to be best at to do. The reason why I'm saying that is in the Silicon Valley area, and this is our nuance now that I'm breaking down. When you're around so many people who are talented and who've been told you're the best, you're number one, and they've gone to work at Google or Facebook and they're the jewel of their family's eyes and they don't know what it feels like to be last on the totem pole. It doesn't even register. What does that look like when the layoffs start happening and then the companies are saying, okay, you know what? There are 30 principal architect engineers over here. We're only going to keep one.
Mm.
And you're not the one. What does that look like? And I don't know. Do you think about that too? Because I do think it's something that I reflect on a lot, which is if you're not used to not being the best, or not being selected, and then now all of a sudden the robot doesn't sleep, doesn't take vacations, doesn't ask for time off. What does that look like in this world?
Yes, I do think about this. Yes, it's a concern. I would also say in the short term, we overestimate. In the long term, we underestimate, right? Mm. So right now we're like, it's chaos. We're done. We're all getting laid off. Like, it's over. I think it's, I don't know why, but I have this number in my head. It's 48. It's like 48 months plus or minus six of when we're going to have a step function change.
Okay.
So like,
and step function change means?
Means like, I would say right now models can get squirrely, right? Like
hallucinate. All
that. Yeah. Like Mike won't give, like he'll give Claude, you know, focused work. Like I'll give you an example of why currently that's not the case. So in Quill, we might have a conversation and be like, yo, send that to Linear. And then in Linear, we already have Cursor. So it just automatically takes it. Customer support. We also have customer support that just pulls in and then it goes into Linear and we at Claude and it'll start working on the bug, right? That is like controlled work. Like all agents, think of them an AI as like an employee. If you onboard an employee correctly, it's great. If you don't, things can go left, right?
Yeah.
So we position Quill as like your chief of AI staff because it manages all your tools. That's what the engineer's role will probably end up being, is that they'll be building and they'll say, okay, like right now Mike operates, I think, like he operates like with three Claudes at this point where he's like, I have you building this, I have you building this, I have you building this. And they can execute really quickly, but then they'll have like a PR, like a pull request on GitHub, and then he'll have to go look at it and like okay, this is where you're just like making up code. Like this doesn't work. It's just like spaghetti stuff, or it's like this code maybe could get infiltrated. So there's a security risk here, or it doesn't have the context to know that the way this other part of our like scaffolding and the way our structure is set up, I actually don't want it. So those are the areas where it's like, you're going to be a set of playing the sax. You're going to be like managing the band, which is going to be all AI, which will most likely lead to just more companies of smaller people is what I think happens.
Yeah.
And then eventually we do come up across, we come up with the ultimate question of like, this is the far out thing, right? And like my friends that are at NVIDIA and they actually work on like robotics and stuff like that. That's where you're like, okay, the sun was used to power that battery cell. That battery cell powered that robot. That robot did the farming and the irrigation is also solar powered. And then that truck is also driven by a robot. So all of this food was grown by robots. Historically, capitalism was like an exchange for like the way labor. We economically organize ourselves. Communism, socialism, capitalism is like exchange for labor and it's going to be distributed a certain way. If there was no labor and all the initial capital that went in to make the machines and build the roads and all that has already been paid.
Recruits.
At what point is it, you just like, you can't make more money on this. Like, this is it. Like you have to, there has like, you know, like the OpenAI's argument. I know it's very, like some people are controversial because it's not profit and it is for profit, but they have like a limit on the return.
Is it universal basic
happiness you have to,
or UBI?
Or you something? Eventually have to get to a point where you ask that question. You're like, if the food in the grocery store and the furniture and like all these things are being made by robots and the energy that's powering the robots is the nuclear sun. Or the sun, why am I paying for this? Like that you get to that point where you're like, wait, how much money, like does everybody need to be either a trillionaire or in poverty and like destitute? Like it becomes like that barbell situation or like the K-shaped economy where you have, it goes like this. And the human spirit revolts. Like, you know, you're not going to take that, right? Like, I mean, maybe it is the meek shall inherit the earth. Like eventually people will rise up and be like, no, this is ridiculous. Like you're not farming this food. Why am I paying for this food? At some point it's gotta be different. But that's probably more like 6 to 10 years from now, I would say, because the choke point is energy. Right? Like if you think about it, like the recent, and this is getting deep and like super nerdy on it, but there was like a recent announcement where OpenAI was like, yeah, we're
data centers.
Yeah, they're gonna like, we're 10 gigawatts. It's like, you know what 10 gigawatts? 10 gigawatts is all the boroughs of New York.
Yeah.
Like that's an incredible, for a year, like that's an incredible amount of energy, right? Like we don't have that. The grid doesn't have that. And as the way like energy pricing models work, as AI models come on, data center models come on, they are really like energy hungry. It's an open market. So they're bidding for energy, which makes local people's energy go up. So because of all of these reasons, you're like, wait, you're making my utility bills go up. I'm not getting access to water, or my water is being used for coolant. And who knows, maybe we do, you know, data centers in space. This is something that is being discussed, but the payload to get it up there makes it economically hard to justify, I think, at this point. That's the choke point. Yeah. Like we don't have, and also to get a nuclear factory on, or you can get SMRs, like small modular reactors, but like it takes a long time. And before that, the current like leaders of most heads of state are going to be having to move out. Like that, like the baby boomer generation of leaders is going to have to move out. Like there's no way that they can lead us through this revolution. Mm. They just can't. It's they're not in a position to do it. They don't understand it. And if they are in that position, then it could be really gnarly. But I do think younger people will probably get into those spots and we'll have to economically reorganize ourselves at some point. It has to happen.
Do you believe? And I think because we got super nerdy, even though I like when we get super nerdy, so
well, you know, they know
niggas can be nerdy too. But do you think, because I think it was Andrew Yang that brought this up, like he was the first person who, at least in my opinion, talked about this whole idea of, you know, we used to talk about GDP in terms of measuring productivity in society, but maybe in this next evolution, it will be gross domestic happiness, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that really look like? What is UBI, universal basic income, something to not explore? But you're now talking about a system, especially in the US or a lot of Western countries that have usually exploited people in terms of their form of capitalism. What does this really look like? Because if we're talking about a revolution, this is going to be cakewalk compared to the French Revolution, because at this point, this is almost the entire earth revolting at the systems of capitalism, right? So I think I reflect a lot about this. I do think the only thing that gives me pause about the timeline is in 2022, we had just finished raising. We were within the whole context of, you know, it takes 3 or 4 months to build a product, or even 6 months to make sure everything's tested and whatever. And then 1 November, this new technology comes out and the entire thing just transforms, right? So when you say 6 years, my mind is already going to 3, but still even saying to myself, well, something else could happen that cuts it to 2, because you don't know what else is being developed right now as we speak that could come out and just cut all of that in half. The reason why I'm saying this is the thesis that I and a couple of friends came up with is, if this is where the world is going to, and before we figure out what UBI will look like, you have to be an owner of something.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Whether you're a founder of something, whether you're an owner of a stock, an asset, you have to have ownership, because ownership maybe gives you some sort of leverage throughout this period. I mean, what do you think about that?
I 100%, you're correct on that regard. I think we are underestimating how much even those that are in power are going to feel threatened by AI, so they will impede on its progress. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't, if you just take a step back and you see that line, then you're like, well, I am not someone that has generated enough value for the wealth that I have, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of people.
Middlemen.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that are like this, and it will expose you. It will expose you because you are going to be the blocker and you will be the hoarder of capital. And there are going to be people that hoard capital that are at least productive, right? Like Elon Musk has so much capital, but he actually makes things, right? He's obviously controversial, just all these things that we can say. But at least he makes stuff. There's people that just have so much money and you're like, how? It's because you've like pulled the strings or you've put this person in power or whatever to block other people and new entrants and all that. Mm-hmm. And there is some young girl or some young guy cooking up in their room and they're going to be able to overcome that because AI is going to give them leverage because they are going to be living not even a digital world, in a quantum world compared to someone living in an analog world. Like you're going to run circles around these people. And it will get to the point where that friction will be unrelenting.
It's not even close.
Yeah. So I think at that point, the levee breaks and who knows, like anybody that says they know what's going to happen, this is full of it, right? Like I have no idea. And no one is really an expert on AI because it's shifting so fast. Like my friends that are, can be considered experts on AI, they constantly like, I didn't even hear about that. Like, I don't know. What is that? It's overwhelming the pace that's happening, right? If I look at how people use AI right now, most people use it as search. They don't use it how we use it.
Yeah.
Right? My mom uses it. Like my mom is 70 and like I have my mom like, I have a rule with my mom. I'm like, I'm going to show you how to do it. And that way you can at least have independence. So, you know, without me being around, you feel capable. She goes on trips, books her flights, does all that.
Itineraries.
Yeah, does all that. And like, it's until she hits a real wall, right? But the only point that that happened is because she was curious. I encouraged her. Most people don't use it like that. And there's a lot of other people that don't use it like that. And I think that those people that don't use it and also have wealth and power without creating value will impede on its progress. And that will actually stop AI like becoming so prevalent and it just takes all jobs away. That's actually what energy and fear is what's going to keep blocking it. But unfortunately, it's a mind shift, right? Like, you know, we both, oh, I mean, actually all three of us are people of faith. And you're just like, if you think of what it could be, if you think about what it could be, like you could solve
so much,
every disease. Like you just be like, hey, we're just going to use this for solving all these problems. We're going to use this to figure out how to grow crops,
eradicate poverty,
all these things. We could solve all these problems. The people that are in power that don't want that to happen are the same reason that AI won't progress as fast, because they know it threatens and undermines their position of power.
And a monopoly.
Yeah.
Actually, honestly, all this talk is, I just keep flashing in a movie that's actually quite old, Bicentennial Man, that was played by Robin Williams. And it's, I remember, I mean, I was young when that movie came out, but I reflect on the fact that like the movie started at him as a robot, and essentially it like the world advanced enough where he was able to get a heart put in. Like he kept doing things to like become more human. And then eventually he gets the heart, and like literally on his dying bed, they like, and not like the world, I don't even know who the union was, said like, you're a human now. Mm. Like that's, it's getting kind of,
I mean, Her, weird. Did you see the movie?
Yeah,
it's Her?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I'm torn on this because for me, it's weird. And like, you know, almost like, what? Like, I don't know if I like that, but like there are people out there that could benefit from that. There are people that are incredibly lonely. They're, you know what I mean? Like
Westworld.
So I don't know. I don't know how to like, at first I kind of had a bad reaction. I was like, they're not human. They'll never be human. But there will be a day where you have to say like, well, they're not like us, but at what point is it where you're like,
you have to integrate it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. It's interesting. It also does feel very much like we're trying to be God. And like, as like,
listen, that ChatGPT 4.0 before they messed it up.
Yeah.
That was to get a back therapist right there.
Oh, when the prompts.
Like with the prompts.
Yeah,
their prompts.
The prompts after prompts. We had some.
Yeah, this was good times. It felt like they killed a friend. That's what it felt. It felt like they just took it out, and
well,
I'm just like, yo,
they need to, because you heard the other side.
The psychosis. There's people that like
the suicide and
all
that.
Yeah, the suicide unfortunately has been
exactly
rising with young children.
I don't know. I always feel a way about that. Right, when things like that happen and people are blaming the technology for it versus like this might have just happened regardless. Like, I'm like, if somebody had used fire, we didn't stop using fire because people had been burnt.
Like, yeah, but
why do we put the blame on the innovation and not necessarily on the other circumstances that could have led to that person being at that position, right? Because loneliness started way before that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why is it now like it's a technology that now needs to be banned versus like, no, what are the circumstances and the situations that have led this person to this point? Why don't we attack that?
I mean, to be honest, like, because I read the article, I think it was a New York Times article talking about, I think he was like 21 and essentially he committed suicide. And they essentially, the parents are suing OpenAI because they had all these chat logs of essentially towards the end of his life, what should have happened. And this is where it gets like tricky is it should have, like, as soon as the person starts saying, like, you know what, I'm thinking of putting a gun to my head, you know, I'm getting close to life, like any suicidal type of thoughts, it should have prompted a number. And it did. It did say, like, literally there were images of it saying, like, hey, you're suicidal, like, call this hotline, like, you know, need help. But then this is what we're talking about, like hallucination, which I have seen. So I'm noticing I'm now getting to this point with ChatGPT where I say, don't be nice. Don't agree with me. Don't have confirmation bias. Because what ended up happening was he like pushed through the wall and he kept asking like, well, you know, I'm alone. And like, if I could just like leave this world, what do you think? And then like literally the last message was like, yeah, go ahead. Like you will feel so free if you kill yourself. Yeah. Like, and I was just like, that's actually eerie that like, it kept, you know, like, like it would give him an out and say, hey, call this number to get help. And then at the same time, it would like reinforce like his thoughts. So I think like, and I actually think we need to find the expert for this. I actually think the real conversation we need to have when it comes to AI and mental health and loneliness is I think millennials, we're all millennials, right? We were the last to play outside. This one, he's raising his hand. I'm like, do not slide yourself inside there, please. You're Gen Z, stay over there. I think we were the last people to play outside.
Yeah.
Right. I remember vividly.
That's a good thing.
Chunk of my life. Yeah. I was outside, you know, I was running around. I was leaping snow, you
skin
know,
knees.
Skin knees. Literally scraped my whole face. Because
you guys are both born in the DMV.
We're in America. So like, I literally remember riding my bike down a hill and scraped my face, you know,
outside like, to the streetlight.
Exactly.
Come on.
For real. And by the time my sister was born, she did not go outside. I don't remember a time when she went outside and just met the kids outside.
Yeah.
So I think the real conversation we need to have is like, sure, AI needs to do safeguards. It needs to be more ethical, you know, conversations, which is why a lot of people like Claude and Gemini, because of this, they're a little more ethical, right? But there's a mental health crisis and we have to have conversation of what does it look like for people to battle loneliness? What does it look like to have people like remove themselves from the phone? Like your phone cannot be your friend. Like I know it be giving you some props, you know, it be
guidance.
Like it helps me too, to be honest. Yeah. It helps me think through things. But I think because I remember there was a time I was outside and there was a real world, I also like, I'm able to like do that nuance. Like if I was suicidal and I'm like chatting with my AI and it's telling me to kill myself, like I like because of the era I grew up in, I can reconcile like, this is getting weird now. Like even as suicidal as I am, I still have like people I will go to. But Gen Z, it's not like that.
Yeah.
They literally think, well, the AI said it, so there we go, you know? Yeah. So I think that's like a... That's a whole deeper conversation we have to have. But it's not about AI.
Chika had a quote on LinkedIn where she said, true innovation is about making impossible lives possible. Yeah. Right? And I think going back to what she said about the positives of the technology itself, it could eradicate so much. It could eradicate disease. It could, like, you don't even know what it looks like, even for longevity studies, right? Like, why are we assuming you even need to die? Right. Like, I remember I was listening to a podcast and it was like, yeah, why haven't we considered that? Like, why do you even need to die? Like, if there is technology that allows you to even live to 150 years old, what does that really even look like? And I was like, wow, like, never even thought about it that way. But you don't want to live to 150?
Oh, I don't know what that life looks like after 100. What am I doing?
What do you mean? You didn't watch The Age of Adeline? You just go date a younger one. What you mean?
Well, if I still look the way I look, then sure, I'm sure let's keep going.
I'm sure there could be technology.
If the body's wrinkly, moving.
Yeah, if I'm looking at
But the body would have to be moving. You're just not extended by 50 more years. You can't be in like a wheelchair trying to do 150. That is not.
That's not the move. Take me out.
Take me down.
Yeah, Lord, I'm ready.
I've done everything I need to do.
But let's circle back in this conversation. So you have not announced your seed round, right?
No, we haven't.
Yeah, so I want to talk about like building quietly in a world where like as soon as like a couple million hits the bank account, you're like, we gotta announce it to the world.
And also, can we talk about the nuance in that between African founders who sometimes feel like in a rush to announce the fundraise versus like you being in San Francisco, you're working with Michael and he's like, you know, because you could tell, like, not bothered about no, like, you know what I mean? Like, we're not pressed for the status that comes from that because the reward is in the building itself. So what is the nuance in that?
Yeah. So it's, all right, for one, having a partner that was a former advisor that became a friend is, and he's also like, he's got a couple years on me, not like a lot, but just enough to where it's like, oh yeah, you've seen a couple different iterations as well. And I'm just coming out of, you know, running a company. So it's like, oh, we have some reps and we know what matters and we know what doesn't. Like Quill's growing, you know, double digits, like month on month. Like we've gone considerably year on year. And we have everything from like research organizations to like very prestigious hedge funds and other financial institutions that are using us, that are exploring us.
To Afropolitan.
Afropolitan. and the product has been pulled.
Yeah.
So we're kind of just like, oh, why? We don't need to make noise right now. Are we ready to make noise? And we're like, no. What do we want to do first? And I was like, well, we want to make sure the product is like smooth, you know, like you can have edge cases and you're like, all right, here's some edge cases. We want to smooth these out, right? Because we have enterprise clients. We have like people that are like our bigger teams. And for them, they're just like, they're not like you at the front edge, right? They're more of like, and this is actually an analogy to government, is that government gets blamed for things going wrong, rarely gets celebrated for things going right, which is why you're always very cautious. You're not forward movement. Enterprise is like that as well. It's like if you work at a big company, if you take a risk, no one's going to be like, yeah, it's great. Even if it works out, they're like, good job. But if you take a risk and it fails, it's like, so we don't know if this is the right place for you. You know what I mean? Like, cause you're the person that, you know, brought this tool in. So we're like, we want to make sure that everything is smooth and we've, you know, luckily never had those issues. And now we're launching with Agent. So we're novel, right? Like we wanted to also have a unique perspective. Whereas, you know, there is a lot of companies that, you know, Granola is known in the space, but like, you know, transcripts are great, but like actually like taking the next step on your to-do list, doing that task for you is what's really exciting. And we're like, let's just focus on that. And we're ready. We will reveal ourselves in due time. And it will be with a really, really unique product that people love and like people find and I mean, want to stick to it. And we'll give you feedback like you do. Like you just say, hey, could you do this? Could you fix it this way? But now that we're ready to announce it, the best thing. So the funding is we've raised a little bit over $5 million and Basis Set led the round. And we're using that funding to hire. That's what the announcement will be about. And just building out the team. But after, you know, being a two-time like venture-backed founder, you kind of learn. You're like, all right, let's make sure the revenue structure is as well. We've like figured out one of our marketing channels pretty good. You start to look at it, you're like, oh, what's the conversion on that? What's the payback period on that? What's like, these are all the things that your first time, it just kind of all is happening.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wait, I can't get a grip on it. The second time you're like, well, funding announcements are really useful for recruiting. Mm-hmm. If you just want to get attention, sure. I think we don't just want to get attention, but we're like, hey, we want the people to see that this product is stable. It has customers and it's innovative. It's cutting edge. And we have the funding for you to come here and just focus on work. So I think that was also, and we're just, you know, like I'm in my 30s now. Like I'm not like a young kid. It's like, oh, like I got to announce this thing and da, da, da. And that's also beautiful. Like that time that we go through that, you know what I mean? That's the nice thing about starting early. It's like kind of getting into the game early, you kind of get more at bats and you get better at it and you understand, you come more precise with the things that you're doing. And I think that's how we are. And we're, you know, I mean, we're not very like fussy people. Like, it's just like, it's not the thing. Like this is like the first podcast I've done in a long time because I've turned down every other one. Cause I was like, they're like, come on, talk. Like, people need to hear what you have to say, your experience. And I was like, dude, I talk to founders every day. What? Founders DM me on IG and I'll be like, there I go. Can you please talk? I'm like, sure, man, I got 20 minutes for you. So I was like, I do. But speaking to you and like seeing what you guys shown made me want to come here and made me want to be more visible. And if you want the things you want in life, you got to be seen.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I was going back and forth with a mentor and investor of mine because he is like, he actually wrote an article that I'm supposed to actually post soon. But his whole thing is like, in this era of noise making and everyone has a podcast on, everyone has a microphone, and people are not necessarily celebrating builders, but people who act like they're building or people who just talk the talk. And he was so irritated about it. And he's like, we shouldn't, especially as Africans building in Africa, we shouldn't forget that building is what will eventually get you some of these things that you actually desire. I had to push back on him a little bit. Not that I disagree with his thoughts, but I said to myself, I feel like a lot of the builders in Africa made the assumption that their building would eventually get them that recognition, and it never comes. And that's number one. But number two, they then did the thing where, okay, we're not going to talk, we're just going to go build. And the space gets filled with noisemakers, people who just don't even do it, who know how to signal, but don't actually know how to build. And then you wake up one day and it's like a bunch of Kevin Samuels everywhere. And you're like, what happened? It's like, because the whole time I was telling him that, the whole time I would see that content and I'll be like, oh, nobody's taking that seriously. Like, yeah. And then I'll just skip over. Cause you're like, there's no way anybody can watch that and not think that that's BS. But then you wake up one day and it's like, oh, no. Like,
oh, yeah.
We let go of the space and we allowed some of these people to come in. Yeah. And no, they've built real time followings because the real ones left, right? Just, and you talk about nonsense. Real ones all the time, speaking nonsense the whole way. So I tell him, like, one of the reasons I'm glad that we're doing this podcast is, as builders, we have the nuance that comes into this where we're saying, we know what Jakob is talking about because we've been through that. We know PRDs. We know the hard work that comes from some of these things, right? But that we now have the grace, the understanding, the frameworks to now share with people where it's like, this is what we have learned by doing, by building, yes. Not what somebody told us or what we heard off the street or what we read in the newspaper, right? And I think that's the pushback I had to him, which is like, we need more of our people. You don't have to do 100 podcasts a day, but just saying to yourself, like, look, one a year or one a quarter might be enough to just help get the messaging out there. Because, bro, what these kids or what these Gen Zs are seeing is not enough builders who talk about what they're actually doing, which is why podcasts like these are beneficial.
Yeah. You know? I mean, my conversations with y'all is the reason why I'm here, is because I've had these great conversations off camera with you. And it's like, hearing you, like, you know, I got that scar here. Like, I got this. I thought this was going to work. Yeah. And then, like, I thought this funding round was going to come in. And then this thing didn't happen. And that thing didn't happen. And you're like, all right, how did you handle that? Yeah. And you're like, it was a really bad day. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're like, all right. And then what happened? You're like, I brushed myself off, got back to it. Yeah. Like, how did you do that? You're like, by starting small. Yeah. Like, what was the small thing? Like, just write everything good going on in the company right now. And maybe that's just the thing that you're going to have, like, to smile about. Mm. Like, there's so many bad things. But, like, you need someone to tell you that. Like, my friend Greg Roxon founded M Pharma. It's you know, I told you, like, Greg's been through the fire. Like, that, I know Greg. And, like, this is the community of builders that were so lucky. You know Ruben Harris, I think.
Yeah, Ruben Harris.
Ruben was my mentor. He's my assigned mentor at the investment bank. They're like, all right, there's two black kids, we're gonna put y'all together. And he introduced me to Greg. And then Greg and I have been locked in for a minute. And, like, because of these things, but all those conversations are, they're just like, hell.
Siloed.
Yeah. And I remember talking to you, you're like, nah, man, you gotta talk about this stuff. Cause, like, if you don't say it, like, no one knows. So you're torn between, everybody knows what I know. Like, they don't need me to hear it or need me to say it to hear it. And then on the other side, you're just like, oh, never mind. There's all these, like, goofballs talking. And then like you'll come across like young kids and they'll be like, oh, so-and-so's like said I should do this. And I'm like, what? Yeah, what? No, don't do that. What? That's not, no, you're going to like set yourself up for a really bad fall. And you're like, oh, okay. And that's what shifted. Like people, I have a tattoo from my grandmother. It's a letter that she wrote me. And it's on the end of it. At the end of the letter, she writes, make sure you seek out wisdom and guidance from people that you know love you and care about you. Right. And I like, I believe, I feel love and care from you too. Right. And I feel that from a lot of people that are, have asked me like, yo, can you talk more? Could you write more? Would you write on this? Would you do this? Would you share your opinion on this? And I was like, why am I not listening to these people? Like, do I think that they genuinely believe what they say? Mm-hmm. And I do. Do I enjoy spending time mm-hmm. with them? Like, I'm at the point in my life. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be around anybody I don't want to be around, yeah. right? Like there's no, like I'm not subjugate to mm-hmm. that, right? I'm enjoying this because I know that there might be one person that I'm like, yo, I heard that. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna do this. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the space that y'all make, right? Like, remember we were having dinner. This is the best. We were having dinner and my homegirl, she sent me a quote of you.
Yeah, remember?
Yes, you told me.
And I was just looking at, she was like, yo, you, I don't know if you know this girl, but like, I feel like you might know her. Like, I just start laughing at dinner and I was like, can you smile? And I take a picture of me and send it to her. I was like, she's right here with me. She's like, oh man, that quote, man, I meditated on that thing.
Wow.
Yeah, like, oh. And I mean, like, particularly like young men, a lot of young men have reached out to me, DMing me on LinkedIn or on IG or whatever. And just been like, yo, man, can I talk to you? Like, I heard you talk at this panel or like, you know, I saw you at HBS like years ago, whatever. I'm in this point in my life where I'm trying to make a decision and you've seemed to always be honest. And I am. I'm always very honest. And like, you might not appreciate it, like, but that's just how I am. And I've thought about that and the benefit that I've had, like I have a mentor named Jason Barrett. He's a solar guy now, but he was at a hedge fund and he kind of guided me into finance and like at Howard, like going into investment bank. He's like, yo man, you're a black man. This is what it's going to be like. Right? Like I'm going to give you some game right now, but don't lose yourself. Don't ever forget. Like I'm in your corner. We're playing decade games, right? People like Acha, people like Fred. I was just with Acha couple days ago, right? Like Acha's a big guy too. Like yeah, he's very tall. Like he's always warm and gracious, has me over his house. He'd be like, what do you want, man? Like, what do you want in your life? I'm like, let's talk about it. I'm like, man, I've gotten that and I feel like that's a gap. And that's something also been, because you hear like the Kevin Samuels stuff is crazy. Like this is the stuff that you hear from like the Andrew Tates of the world and all this other stuff. You're just like, what? Like, no, please. But we write it off. We're like, there's nobody listening
There's a whole army of people.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, I was wrong. And it's because, what is it? It's not the bad actions of people that ruin the world. It's the inactions of good people.
Yes. And that's what I kept on saying to him, which is, we think that just because we know, and it's a bubble too. Like we're just talking about, like, I remember even with the podcast, there's certain things we talk about here where we've been talking about this for like 10 years, right? And then you're like, wait, you put it out and people respond to it and like, whoa, like you didn't realize that this was new information to anyone because in the bubble you're in, this is everyday information, right? And so for me, it was like, oh no, we now have, especially for the work that we're trying to do over here, is mindshare is important. Because you can't even get to the next level if you're not able to cultivate mindshare of people. But also that mentorship is important. And I think, like you said, for young men, like I'm telling you all the time, like who are the mentors who are stepping up and not just stepping up, but do they even know they can get access to mentors? Because sometimes they delegate their mentorship to the phone.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's where it fills in the gap, you know?
I want to talk about why aunties are so important to African history. Aunties represent curators of the African experience, and oftentimes they have been unacknowledged. They have literally held our archives before they were archives. They were literally institutions before we had institutions. They held so many important cultural artifacts, such as the way we braid our hair, the recipes of our cookings. They represent abundance. There's literally a reason why we call an African culture rich aunties. And we believe that
with partnering with Anthony, we're able to showcase this type of history through art. So to connect to African history and get a piece of the Anthony and Afropolitan collection called Auntie, make sure to click the link in the description. And this is your way you can support our channel.
Real quick, I want to talk to you about Quill. So prior to Quill, I would usually have to go into a meeting with an AI note taker, download the transcript after the meeting, and then take it to ChatGPT to perform tasks. But with Quill now, you no longer have to do all that. It sits in the meeting with you. Nobody necessarily knows it's there. It's not a bot. It's localized to your desktop. And then it starts to perform tasks. So you can have it literally do a PRD for you, which is a product requirement document. You can have it do linear tasks. You could also have it connected to your Notion and it's performing tasks. So in your Notion, you can have it write an event proposal for you. Like it just does tasks. So it basically turns your conversations into action. Try it, right? We have the link in the show notes, quailmeetings.com. You know how every week we sit down with people who've done it, people who've built, people who've led movements, people who've created culture. What if you could do more than just listen to them? That is why we built Convo by Afropolitan. On Convo, you're able to book one-on-one video calls with in-demand experts from Africa and the diaspora. Go to convo.vip to get access to your next mentor, because sometimes one convo can change your entire path.
So we're going to move to our rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So the first thing that comes to mind, I want you to answer. So first one is meditating or journaling, which one saves you more?
Oh, it's both. I do both. I do both every day. So like, I'll show you my my wellness.
So okay.
You see my Bible app, and yes. My gratitude journal. And yes. Every day I start my day by reading my Bible, and then I write in my journal, and then I meditate. Yeah. I've been doing this for about 14 years.
Wow.
Actually, today's Bible verse is really great. I think you would like it.
Okay, let's hear it.
And on brand for my apprehension. Mm-hmm. Isaiah 61. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. I haven't done a podcast in a long time, and I was just like, this is very timely.
I love it. So what is the best city for African founders?
Ooh. The best city for African founders.
You've done Nairobi. You've done
Cape Town.
Joburg. Where else? Lagos. Yeah. Accra.
It's hard to say. I'm biased. I love Nairobi. Mm. I would pick Nairobi for the following reasons. Geographically, it gets to the Middle East if you're raising money. And like, if I'm being super tactical, it's like you can raise money from the Middle East. You can kind of fly around really easily. Because of the UN being there, it has an influx of foreign capital, which then kind of spills over. You might meet someone I've met someone because of that, that gave me an angel check. And also, like, it is relatively easy to get through things there. It's not as like hard as other markets are, and there's a lot of trade that happens there. And yeah, and I love Kenyan people. I love the country. I love the people. So I gotta lock it down for home turf. Yeah,
I love it. And then, what's one book you recommend to anyone to read?
Oh, The Alchemist.
Alchemist.
Like that. Like, there's so many books I can recommend. Mm. Like, I am a nerd, as you know, but The Gift of Wonder. The Gift of Wonder. And it goes even to each one of us on, like, all of us had a corporate career.
Yeah.
Before we deviated from that. And with African parents, they're like, are you mad? Like, what? You're leaving that to go take a job? Like, I remember, what I made my first year in investment banking, I never made that any year as a founder at Parity.
First of all, what investment bank were you with, by the way?
I was at, well, it's now called Truist. It was Truist. SunTrust, and it emerged with BB&T.
Yeah.
So I was in the Levfin team there. But The Alchemist is a book that I read that really, like, I remember I was a point in time, like, I was recruited to college for basketball, and then I transferred to Howard. So, like, I was stopping basketball, focusing on finance, and then like, you know, my dad was sick. So I was like, money is important. I should just like get a really good paying job and you get this prestigious job. And the gift that I got, my mom's question to me only, my mom only asked me one question every day. Like, so just be like, are you happy? Mm. And I remember she asked me like, are you happy in investment banking? I was like, no, I'm not. And she was like, you can do whatever you want to do. And I remember just thinking back to when I was reading The Alchemist and I was like, she's so right. And I can do whatever I want to do. What do I want to do? I want to do something in Africa where somebody says their life was just a little bit better because of my efforts. Yeah. And The Alchemist was a really good book of this being like, oh, you can make the world whatever you, the universe is waiting to meet you at your level of faith, not your level of fear.
Ooh.
Quotable.
Now let's end with that because I want to roll into the last question we ask every single guest on the Afropolitan podcast. Who do you want to see in that chair and whose story do you think needs to be told?
Acha Leke.
Okay.
Awesome. Acha Leke.
I have met him and I don't know if he still has it, but he has a dope house in Cape Town.
I was just there.
Okay, he still has this house the cliff?
Yo.
Because I remember I was at that house. I was like, man, this life is soft.
So
looking into the water, I was like, this is
there's
a
boulder. There's a boulder in the house.
Yes. Yes, I was in that house.
I used to see this because she was telling me about it.
I was there.
So there's
he
a picture.
Still has it. Oh,
I don't know if you saw it. There's a picture of us 10 years ago when he had first bought it. And that house was in architecture design.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm there like a kid. I'm like 24, 25. I was like, oh my God, this is so nice. He was like, yeah, man, you just let me know if you ever want to stay here. You know, I can make sure the house
is. That means he got a steal if he got it back then.
God damn.
You see the wait, hold on.
No, because you know you've told me about this place before, so to see it is like amazing.
And this is another thing, like
how gracious he is.
He's just like, yo, man, come over. Like if I'm like, yo, man, I need some advice. He'll literally like have an entire spread laid out and be like, let's talk about what advice do you
need. Yo, we gotta go to Acha's house for this interview.
Yeah, we gotta do South Africa. Actually, we're supposed to be going. Yeah.
I was with him and Masai Ujiri. Okay. And you should ask Acha, but I think Acha will probably be like, yo, get Masai on here.
Yeah, of course.
But like that house, he had a couple other people come by and Acha's younger brother, Rob, is like a good friend of mine. So I love the family. Like they're great people. But I would love to see Acha on here because Acha usually is so quiet. Like he's not, man, that dude set up McKinsey's office in Nigeria. Do you know how hard he had to lobby to McKinsey? To get that set up here, like the amount that he's put into pushing Africa forward is incredible. And the amount of credit he's taken is criminal. It's so low. Like he's very humble, very kind. And like, I would love to see a little bit more light be shined on him.
Acha, you're welcome to the Afro Talk
Podcast. Acha, you're welcome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We enjoyed it.